to Aviation Intelligence Weekly with Sarah and Mike, your guide to the aviation industry. Jet fuel at $171 a barrel, highest of 2026, up 57% year over year. And that number is sitting on top of every airline balance sheet, every fleet plan, and every route map heading into winter. That's what this week was about.
And it's not just a fuel story. We had 8 Indonesian airports shut down by volcanic ash, more than 1,000 UK flights canceled by an ATC failure, and JetBlue somehow guiding up into all of it. This week was a stress test, and we're going to find out who passed.
We'll dig into the GE acquisition, what JetBlue's revised guidance actually signals for the carrier sector, and what the MRO data is telling us about where the real constraint in this industry is right now.
Before we get into it, follow the show wherever you're listening, and next week's episode finds you automatically.
So let's set the framework here. This week's narrative was a persistent fuel shock exposing structural differences between business models, operators with pricing power, and greater financial flexibility on one side, and those running exposed to a cost environment that's now genuinely punishing on the other. This isn't a bad week for airlines. It's a filter.
That's the right frame, because the headline numbers look like broad sector weakness, but underneath that, you've got JetBlue raising RASM guidance by 4 percentage points at the midpoint, while the ultra-low-cost end of the market is under real pressure.
Operationally, at $171 a barrel for jet fuel, route economics that worked at $110 simply don't work anymore. Carriers are already trimming growth plans. Ryanair is the cited example, and the Q4 winter planning cycle is happening right now under this cost assumption.
And the Spirit Airlines liquidation in May is a reminder of what happens when an already fragile business model meets a prolonged period of cost and balance sheet pressure.
For investors, the question is whether the revenue side, RASM improvement, demand resilience, can outrun the cost side. And this week's data suggests the answer is yes for the carriers with yield management strength and genuinely uncertain for the ones without it.
Which is what makes JetBlue's filing the most counterintuitive data point of the week, because that is not a carrier anyone expected to be leading on revenue guidance right now.
The most important signal this week came from the airline sector's pricing environment holding under fuel and operational stress. And the JetBlue 8K is the clearest evidence we have of that.
A carrier that's been in turnaround mode, raising RASM guidance by 4 points at the midpoint, projecting 17 to 20% year-over-year growth. That is not a soft pricing environment.
Operationally, what that tells you is that demand elasticity, the point at which fare increases start pushing passengers away, has not been reached yet, even as the pricing environment remains strong. Booking trends are strong, and the pricing environment is, in JetBlue's words, constructive.
For investors, the implication is that the revenue recovery thesis for carriers with network discipline and yield management is still intact, even as the cost side gets more painful. The margin question is open, but the top line story is holding.
And that's the tension that defines this whole week: revenue holding, cost surging. Who survives that math is the positioning question for the rest of 2026.
All right, let's get into the numbers. TSA screened just under 11.7 million passengers this week, up 5.4% year over year, and running about 4% above the 3-year average. So the demand signal from the checkpoint data is genuinely constructive.
That's the backdrop. Actual bodies moving through airports, above trend, above last year. Whatever the cost pressures are on the supply side, the consumer is still flying.
And yet the stocks didn't reflect that. Broad sector weakness this week. The common pressure behind this coordinated move was the fuel shock. A jet fuel at its 2026 peak is a margin compression story that overrides near-term demand signals in the equity market.
Let's start with the biggest loser, because it's the most interesting. Howmet Aerospace, down more than 11% for the week, with a single session drop of nearly 11% on September 8th. That's a significant move for an industrial components supplier.
And it's not coincidental timing that the GE acquisition announcement dropped the same day.
Walk me through that, Red, because I want to be precise about what the data says versus what we're inferring.
The GE8K disclosed an $11.75 billion cash acquisition of Consolidated Precision Products, a manufacturer of highly engineered castings. My read is the market repriced the competitive landscape for precision casting suppliers on that news.
That's the inference. What the filing establishes is the deal terms and the timeline, expected to close second half of 2027, subject to regulatory approvals. Whether Howmet's move was driven by that or by broader sector rotation, the filing doesn't establish the causality.
Fair, but a double-digit move on the same day as a major castings acquisition announcement, I'd want a better alternative explanation before I let GE off the hook.
So would I. My read is the same as yours. The market is pricing a competitive shift in the precision component space. I just want to be clear we're calling that an inference, not a fact.
Agreed. And GE itself was down about 4% for the week, with the biggest single-day move of nearly 3% on September 9th. An $11-plus billion cash deal gets the market's attention on capital allocation.
What matters with GE's move is less the stock reaction and more what the acquisition signals structurally. Bringing Consolidated Precision Products in-house is a vertical integration play, GE getting tighter control over a critical casting supply chain.
Which, given what we know about supply chain fragility right now, makes sense as a strategic posture. The operational question is whether the regulatory timeline holds. Second half of 2027 is a long runway.
Let's move through the rest of the sector picture. The major cargo operators were down between 2 and 3% for the week, with the biggest moves on September 8th. That's consistent with the fuel pressure thesis, although this week's price action alone doesn't establish the cause.
Higher operating costs hit cargo economics hard. Those networks run on thin margin relative to the revenue per unit, and a fuel spike at this magnitude changes the calculus on route profitability fast.
On the airline side, the picture is more mixed than it looks at first pass. The major network carriers were down less than 2% across the board for the week, which, given the backdrop,
NE is actually pretty resilient. Delta and United each had their biggest single-day gains on September 11th, Delta up about 2%, United up over 3% on that one session. So there was a recovery move late in the week.
And that's consistent with the JetBlue guidance signal landing and the market reassessing whether the revenue environment can hold. JetBlue itself was down nearly 5% for the week, which is interesting given that it was the carrier that filed positive guidance.
The market is skeptical. JetBlue raised revenue guidance, but the stock went down. My read is that investors are looking through the RASM improvement to the cost side and asking whether the math works on fuel.
That's where it gets genuinely uncertain. The filings show stronger booking trends and no demand elasticity observed. Those are the facts. What the filing doesn't resolve is the net margin picture given fuel at current levels.
On the low-cost and ultra-low-cost end, Frontier was down nearly 6% for the week. That's the carrier most directly exposed to thin margin economics and fuel volatility.
What matters is the divergence within the airline category. The major network carriers held. The ultra-low-cost names didn't. And Spirit's liquidation sits in the background as a reminder of where that stress trajectory can lead.
The defense primes moved in a tighter band, mostly down 1 to 4% for the week. Nothing that looks like a fundamental repricing. The aerostructures and component space had the drama, with Howmet standing out significantly from the rest of the industrial group.
And on the manufacturing side, GE down about 4%, RTX down about 1.5% for the week, Boeing nearly flat. The more interesting signal in the manufacturers isn't the price action. It's the order book context, which we'll get into when we dig into the supporting signals.
The one standout on the upside, Textron, up about 2.5% for the week. Quiet week for the company in terms of filings, but the stock held up well against the sector headwind.
What matters is less the Textron number in isolation and more what it says about selective risk appetite. In a week where the macro story was fuel shock and operational disruption, the market still found names to rotate into.
All right, I think that's the right place to draw the line on the price recap and get into what's actually driving these moves at a structural level, because the fuel story and the castings acquisition are the two threads that pull everything else together.
And both of those threads run straight into the filing evidence. Let's get into it.
So let's start with what GE actually did this week, because I think the $11.75 billion number is getting treated as a headline when the structural argument underneath it is more interesting than the price tag.
Walk me through it.
Consolidated Precision Products makes highly engineered castings, investment castings, airfoils, structural components, the kinds of parts that go directly into engine hot sections and airframes. These are not commodity components. The tolerance requirements, the metallurgy, the process qualification time, all of that creates significant barriers to entry and significant switching costs for the OEM.
And GE is already one of CPP's largest customers. So this isn't GE buying a stranger. This is GE buying a supplier it already depends on and deciding it would rather own that dependency than manage it at arm's length.
That's the vertical integration read, and I think it's the right one. My read is that GE's leadership looked at the last 3 years of supply chain disruption, the casting shortages that slowed engine deliveries industry-wide, and concluded that the option value of owning that capacity outweighs the capital cost.
But here's where I'd push back slightly. $11.75 billion in cash is a significant capital commitment for a company that's also managing a long production ramp on the GE9X and LEAP programs. The regulatory timeline is second half of 2027. That's nearly 2 years of capital sitting in escrow, essentially.
It's not sitting in escrow. The deal hasn't closed yet, so the cash is still on the balance sheet. But your underlying point is fair. The opportunity cost of committing that capital is real, and the market appears to have noticed.
GE was down about 4% for the week. The biggest single-day move was nearly 3% on September 9th. That's the day after the 8K. So the initial reaction on the 8th was relatively contained, and then the market continued selling the following session.
Which to me suggests the initial read was neutral to skeptical. And then, as investors worked through the valuation math, what multiple are you paying for a castings manufacturer? The skepticism deepened.
We don't have the EBITDA figure for CPP in the filing, so the multiple is genuinely opaque from public data. What the filing does establish is the purchase price, the cash consideration, the expected closing window, and the regulatory conditionality. The rest is inference.
And the Howmet Aerospace connection, down 11%+ on the same day. Howmet is one of the largest independent manufacturers of precision aerospace components in the world. Investment castings, forged wheels, engine components. If GE is acquiring its own casting supply, that's one less major OEM in the open market for Howmet's products over the long run.
My read aligns with yours there, but I want to flag what the evidence doesn't establish. The filing says nothing about CPP's customer concentration or how much of their book is GE versus third-party OEMs. If CPP was already predominantly a captive GE supplier, the competitive impact on Howmet is more limited than the market reaction implies.
That's a genuinely important distinction, and it cuts in an interesting direction, because if CPP was already largely GE captive, the 11% Howmet move might be an overreaction to an announcement that changes less than it appears to.
Alternatively, and this is the other plausible reading, the market isn't just pricing the direct competitive impact. It might be pricing a signal that OEMs broadly are looking to internalize more of their supply chain, and Howmet is repricing to reflect a world where its major customers are increasingly building vertical capability.
That's the bigger and more bearish structural argument, and I can't dismiss it. The GE deal doesn't prove it, but it's consistent with it. Boeing has been doing more in-house. Airbus has strategic stakes in suppliers. There's a direction here.
What would change that read? A Howmet recovery back toward the top of its range in the next 4 to 6 weeks, with the company providing guidance that doesn't show customer concentration risk, would suggest the market overshot. the move holding or deepening would be consistent with the structural repricing thesis.
And the regulatory timeline matters enormously for the GE story specifically. Second half of 2027 is a long closing window. There's real antitrust scrutiny possible here, given GE's existing position in the engine market and CPP's role in the supply chain. The filing appropriately hedges on regulatory approvals, but that's not a throwaway clause.
It's worth noting that RTX was down about 1.5% for the week, a much smaller move than either GE or Howmet. RTX has its own internal casting and components capability through Pratt & Whitney's supply chain relationships. The relative resilience there might suggest the market views this as more of a GE-specific competitive move than a sector-wide restructuring.
Or RTX is just a bigger company with more diversification across defense and commercial, so the magnitude of the signal gets diluted. I wouldn't read too much into RTX's stability without more data on their specific CPP exposure.
Fair. The takeaway on the GE signal is this. My read is that an $11.75 billion commitment to bring precision casting capability in-house suggests GE sees enough long-term value in supply chain control to justify owning the capacity rather than continuing to manage that dependency externally. Whether the capital allocation math works at that price is genuinely open. What's not open is the directional bet they're making.
And the helmet repricing, whatever its precise cause, is telling you the market took that directional bet seriously enough to adjust valuations across the peer group in a single session. That's not noise.
Let's move to the second thing this week that deserves structural attention. And it runs in the opposite direction from the supply chain tightening story. The JetBlue guidance revision is a demand signal, and it's a better one than the stock reaction would suggest.
That's the paradox of the week. JetBlue raises RASM guidance by 4 percentage points at the midpoint, from 12.5% to 16.5% year over year, up to 17 to 20%. And the stock ends the week down nearly 5%.
So, either the market is wrong about JetBlue, or I'm wrong about what the guidance revision signals. Let me make the bull case, and then you tell me where it breaks.
Go ahead.
The guidance revision tells you that pricing is holding and that demand hasn't buckled, despite fares reflecting the fuel cost pass-through. No meaningful demand elasticity observed. That's language in the filing. Strong booking trends into the quarter. That's not a carrier describing a fragile consumer. That's a carrier describing a consumer who is still flying and still paying.
Here's where it breaks for me, or at least where I'd hold the bull case at arm's length. The filing also discloses weather and ATC constraints eating into the quarter. That means some of the RASM improvement is supply side. Fewer available seat miles means more revenue concentrated into a smaller capacity base, which mechanically lifts RRASM even if total revenue dollars don't move.
That's a genuinely important technical point. RASM is revenue per available seat mile. If weather and ATC force capacity cuts, RASM can improve even if demand is flat. You're right that the filing doesn't isolate the demand component from the supply compression component.
So my read is that the guidance revision is real but partially structural. Some genuine demand strength, some capacity discipline imposed by operational constraints. The market may be discounting the RASM number because it understands this distinction.
And the 5% stock decline suggests the market is doing the second order math. Raising the numerator while the denominator shrinks is less impressive than raising it with capacity flat or growing. The question for Q4 is whether the demand strength holds when capacity normalizes.
There's also the fuel overlay. Even if JetBlue captures every dollar of the RASM improvement, jet fuel at $171 a barrel, up 57% year over year, is consuming a significant portion of that revenue gain on the cost side. The filing raised the revenue outlook. It didn't address the cost equation.
Which is why I describe the JetBlue signal as constructive on revenue, but inconclusive on margin. The top line story is holding. Whether that translates to operating leverage depends on fuel trajectory and capacity management through the rest of the year.
The TSA checkpoint data reinforces the demand side. 11.7 million passengers screened this week, up 5.4% year over year, and nearly 4% above the three-year average. Consumer demand for air travel is not the variable that's breaking down right now.
What's breaking down is the cost structure for carriers without pricing power or financial flexibility. The divergence within the airline sector this week makes that visible. Major network carriers absorbing the fuel shock with relative stability, Frontier down nearly 6%, JetBlue down 5% despite the positive guidance.
The Frontier Form 4 is a small but directionally relevant data point alongside that stock move. A senior HR vice president selling shares under a prearranged 10b5-1 plan isn't a signal on its own. These plans are established months in advance, and the sale here was scheduled back in June. But it sits alongside a carrier that lost nearly 6% of its market value this week in a fuel environment that hits ultra-low-cost economics particularly hard.
I'd be careful not to overread the Frontier Form 4. Routine 10b5-1 execution is exactly that. Routine. The plan was adopted June 3rd, the sale executed September 4th. The timing relative to the stock move this week tells us very little about insider conviction. What it tells us is that the SVP of Human Resources had a liquidity need that he arranged for well in advance, which is standard financial planning.
Fully agree. I'm not reading it as a negative insider signal. I'm noting that the contextual backdrop for low-cost carriers is challenging independent of that filing. The filing doesn't add to the thesis. The fuel economics do.
The eVTOL Form 4, from one of the leading names in the space, is a similar category of filing. An estate planning transfer, no cash consideration, shares moving from direct to indirect ownership through a family trust. Aicha Evans repositioned about 18% of her direct holding into the Evans Family Trust, where she serves as trustee. Beneficial ownership unchanged in economic terms.
Nothing in that filing changes the eVTOL thesis in either direction. The 8K is more interesting. The prospectus supplement for just over 2.4 million shares issued as contingent consideration for the Strata Critical Medical acquisition, the former Blade Air Mobility passenger segment.
My read on that 8K is that the milestone-based structure of that consideration is worth noting. Shares issued against EBITDA milestones achieved in the 12 months post-acquisition. That's not dilution without a performance anchor. The seller earned those shares against a metric.
The leading eVTOL names were still down on the week. The largest was off about 5%, with the biggest single-day move, a drop of over 6%, on September 9th, while other eVTOL names were down about 2.25%. The eVTOL space moved broadly in line with the risk-off tone of the week.
Nothing in the eVTOL filings this week changes the underlying commercialization timeline thesis. What the share issuance does is confirm that the acquisition integration is proceeding against predefined milestones, which is at minimum consistent with the operational narrative management has been running.
The other two Form 4 filings this week, scheduled 10b5-1 sales and equity compensation activity, screened as routine. Nothing in those filings altered the picture in either direction, so we'll leave them there.
The through line connecting both supporting signals this week is actually the same structural argument. The aviation industry is in a phase where cost exposure and supply chain control are being repriced simultaneously. GE is paying $11+ billion to control casting supply. JetBlue is capturing revenue but can't escape fuel costs. Helmut is being marked down on the perception that OEM vertical integration is a secular trend rather than a one-time event.
And the demand signal from TSA data sits above all of it, holding steady. The consumer is not the variable that breaks this. The question is, which part of the supply chain captures the value that consumer is generating?
So that brings us to the divergence that's been sitting underneath everything we've talked about this week, and I want to name it precisely. Within the aerostructures and components category, you had Hexcel up almost 1% for the week, with its biggest single-day gain of 3+% on September 11th, while Helmut lost more than 11%. Same category, same macro environment, radically different outcomes. Is this cyclical positioning or structural differentiation?
My read is structural, and here's why. Hexcel's exposure is primarily composite materials, carbon fiber, woven prepregs, structural panels, not precision castings. The GE acquisition signal, whatever it means for the casting competitive landscape, doesn't touch Hexcel's product line in the same way. The market appears to be pricing that distinction.
That's one reading. The other reading is that Hexcel's gain on September 11th was a late-week recovery move tied to the broader risk-on tone that also lifted Delta and United that session, meaning the divergence from Haumet is less about structural differentiation and more about which names had already sold off and which hadn't.
I'd push back on that. Hexcel's 3%+ gain on the 11th came on a day when the broader industrial tape was mixed. If it were pure risk-on recovery, I'd expect the leading aftermarket supplier in that peer group to participate similarly. And instead, the top aftermarket distributor was down nearly 3% for the week, with its biggest single-day drop of nearly 3% on September 8th.
Fair point. The leading aftermarket distributor is MRO adjacent, distribution heavy, and it trades at a premium valuation that compresses faster when the market gets risk averse. The September 8th move, there may be more valuation normalization than a read on operational fundamentals.
So the three-way split within Aerostructures, Hexcel up, the top aftermarket distributor down 3, Haumet down 11, tells me the market is making granular distinctions between material science exposure, distribution model exposure, and precision manufacturing exposure. That's not a cyclical rotation. That's structural repricing of where the supply chain risks and competitive threats actually sit.
My read is that the GE acquisition was the catalyst that accelerated that repricing in a single week. Before September 8th, you could hold a diversified Aerostructures position and assume the sector moved together. After September 8th, the market is telling you those subcategories have different risk profiles.
Which has real implications for how investors think about the sector going forward. The actionable frame isn't which company is cheap. It's understanding which subcategories the market is now treating as structurally distinct. The divergence visible this week didn't exist in the same form 2 weeks ago.
And the defense primes are running their own divergent story underneath this. Northrop up slightly, Lockheed nearly flat. L3Harris down more than 4%, Kratos down about 2.25%. That spread within defense primes in the same week, with no individual company-specific catalysts visible in the filings, suggests sector-level repositioning rather than stock-specific news.
My read on the L3Harris move specifically, down 4%+ for the week, is that it's the most systems integration exposed of the defense primes, and systems integration businesses carry more margin risk when supply chain costs are rising. That's an inference, not established by any filing this week, but the relative magnitude of the move is worth flagging.
So the base case is that the divergence within both Aerostructures and defense is structural repricing, driven by the GE acquisition signal and rising cost environment. But the key risk is that what looks like structural differentiation is actually late cycle sector rotation that reverses as soon as fuel prices moderate and the GE deal is stress tested by the regulatory process.
That's the frame I'd carry into next week. And speaking of next week, there are four specific things I'll be watching.
Let's hear them.
Watch any analyst note or investor day commentary addressing Haumet's customer concentration and CPE overlap, because it will confirm or contradict whether the 11% move was a rational repricing or a market overreaction to an imprecisely understood competitive signal.
Watch JetBlue's capacity and cost guidance updates if any additional disclosure follows the 8K, because it will confirm or contradict whether the RASM improvement is demand-driven or supply compression-driven, which is the key unresolved question from this week's filing.
Watch jet fuel spot price movement relative to the $171 per barrel 2026 peak established this week, because it will confirm or contradict whether the cost pressure intensifies into the Q4 winter planning cycle or begins to provide relief that changes the margin math for the carriers most exposed.
and watch any regulatory filing or DOJ dot comment on the GECPP acquisition because it will confirm or contradict the timeline assumption of second half 2027, and a regulatory challenge would reopen every inference we've drawn about what this deal signals for supply chain strategy.
Four clean threads heading into next week, and each one resolves a specific ambiguity we've named this week, rather than speculating past the data we have.
So, let me pull this together. Three things define this week. Fuel has reached a level where it is forcing real operating and fleet decisions. Demand is still holding, TSA traffic above trend, JetBlue's RASM guidance up 4 points at the midpoint, no demand elasticity observed. But that revenue strength is now fighting a much tougher cost environment. And GE's acquisition puts a price tag on something we've been watching for years. Control of constrained aerospace supply chains has strategic value. $11.75 billion in cash to own casting capability, and the peer group repriced in a single session.
The question now is duration. If fuel retreats quickly, say back below 150, some of this week's airline pressure proves cyclical, and the revenue story gets room to show through. If it stays elevated through winter planning, the operating decisions it forces become much harder to reverse.
And on the supply chain side, the question is whether GECPP is a one-company vertical integration decision or evidence of something broader across the OEMs. Helmut's reaction suggests the market is at least considering the second possibility, and a regulatory challenge to the deal would reopen that question entirely.
The one thing that would change all of it is the demand signal deteriorating, TSA numbers rolling over, booking trends softening, because that's been the most consistent positive in this data set all year. So far, it's holding. The week in one sentence, a persistent fuel shock and a major vertical integration bet are exposing which business models can absorb cost pressure and which can't. And whether that separation lasts is the question the next few months will answer.
That's this week's read. If you found the depth of analysis useful, the way we work through what the filings actually establish versus what we're inferring, follow the show and you'll get this level of detail automatically every week.
We'll see you next week.
This podcast is for informational purposes only and does not constitute financial, investment, or legal advice. All stock performance data, SEC filing summaries, and TSA checkpoint figures referenced in this episode reflect publicly available information for the week of September 6th through September 13th, 2026. Past performance of any security discussed is not indicative of future results. The host's views are their own analytical interpretations and should not be construed as recommendations to buy, sell, or hold any security. Always consult a qualified financial professional before making investment decisions. Welcome to Aviation Intelligence Weekly with Sarah and Mike, your guide to the aviation industry. Want the inside track on aviation's biggest players? Aviation Intelligence Weekly brings you expert analysis of airline earnings, breaking industry news, and deep dive company histories. From American Airlines to Boeing, we cover the business of flight every week. Subscribe now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen.